The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McClain and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk TNT.
Brian, we and other hosts on TNT have been big supporters of the January 6th defendants that are being held just unbelievable conditions and sentenced to absurd sentences around the country. We've got grandmothers in jail for having walked into the Capitol and staying within the velvet ropes, taking pictures and on and on and on. Well, those federal J6 defendants have found an unlikely ally in their corner. Alexandra Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi's daughter, who was filming a documentary that day, has said the quiet part out loud on a recent recorded phone call. She accused judges of handing down arbitrary, capricious, and unfair sentences, stating that some judges are dismissing charges and other judges are giving several years in prison for the exact same charges, that there's no uniformity across courts and that this is undermining faith in the judicial system. I think Alexandra's right. I think we finally found something with which we agree on.
Yeah, who'd have thunk it? That's why it's always good to keep the door a little bit, cracked in places where you thought maybe it had been slammed in your face. She said, here's her quote, "I think I learned in kindergarten that justice is supposed to be fair. A judge is supposed to be the same, and they're not supposed to be political. And now it's like one judge you get really makes a difference, because some judges are giving probation and others are giving full jail time for the exact offense, literally the same exact offense. That is wrong, and that is not what people think is justice."
Well, I just want to give Alexander kudos, and I'm really hoping that she doesn't do the standard issue walk back tomorrow.
Yeah, once something like this gets printed, we will see that quite often, especially in a, quote unquote, elite family like the Pelosi's.
And Brian, last hour, Angela Stanton King referenced, I believe it was Angela, referenced Animal Farm and the sheep bleeding. Maybe it was you that said that, Animal Farm and the sheep bleeding.
That was Angela. Yeah, brilliant.
It never ceases to amaze me how stupid the mouth-breathing morons on the left are. But then Joe Biden, a lot of them still, they honestly believe that it was not Tina Fey that said, "I can see Russia from my house." Everybody thinks that it was the vice presidential candidate, but it wasn't. It was Tina Fey on Saturday Night Live, and yet they are convinced that it was Sarah Palin that said it. Well, Joe Biden seems convinced that Donald Trump told people to inject bleach in their veins, when that claim has been thoroughly debunked. And yet Biden is still out there. He pushed it again today.
Well, these things stick in your head when you're unfortunately experiencing dementia. You can't blame the guy for drinking his own Kool-Aid or drinking his party's own Kool-Aid or the CIA Kool-Aid via the mass media or whoever hands him his, teleprompter and his talking packet for the day.
Yeah, and just to be clear for folks that might not be familiar with the story, what Donald Trump was talking about was, it's called blood irradiation, and they do it using an IV. They'll put in a glass probe and an LED probe and use ultraviolet light to disinfect the blood that's flowing past, just like they use ultraviolet light to disinfect escalator railings now. And that's what he was talking about. Later on in the conversation, they were talking about bleach and other surface cleaners. And some idiot reporter put the two together deceptively. And the meme has stuck. And of course, Trump never said to inject yourself with bleach. It's balderdash.
Well, one thing that I will always be have gratitude to Donald Trump for is bringing to the forefront the meme of fake news, because it's not just a meme, it's actually our environment. We live in an environment full of propaganda and fake news. So, at least the American public has that term in its zeitgeist now, and hopefully they understand why it is there.
And I think they do. And I think that's why so many people are enjoying listening to TNT. But do you think we're doing a good job? Let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, X, Instagram, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk TNT.
Keeping the commitment.
I love you guys.
Unbelievable.
24/7.
Listen to you every day, have for years.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Robert Jenrick, the conservative member of parliament who stepped down from his role as immigration minister in the United Kingdom's Home Office last year, called the government's post-Brexit immigration policy a complete disaster and a betrayal to voters who for decades have elected parties promising to cut the number of new arrivals into Britain. Quote, the notion that mass immigration brings a net economic benefit to a developed nation is a myth that needs to be debunked, he claimed. Joe Lombardi, founder and president of Iron Hawk Financial, joins us to break this concept down. Joe, welcome back to State of the Nation.
Hey, good to see you, Timothy.
So this is absurd, right? That people coming here with very poor language skills, often illiterate, no higher mathematics skills, no record of entrepreneurial success, really no job skills, that somehow they're going to be a net positive for the country. That's just absurd on its face, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the logic is they're going to take jobs that Americans are too lazy to do or don't want to do. But the problem with that is that the quality of life that comes with those jobs and them trying to send money back to the people that they have families with out of the country. So there is no net positive with that, because all the gains that they're receiving, which, by the way, tons of them just get paid cash. So that whole, we're going to spend all this money putting them up in luxury hotels, $1,000 a night in Manhattan hotels, and then through somehow years later, because they're going to become a dishwasher, they're going to be a car washer, they're going to be having some career doing that, that they're going to be paying taxes back into the system. Well, if you look historically, when you have those type of jobs, landscapers, masons, roofers, which are a lot of my clients, the business owners anyway, you know, those people are very concerned about sending money back to their country, to their family, and they don't claim any money on their tax return. So where is the government going to be receiving all this money back that they're just giving them in free cell phones, free housing, free Medicare, free DACA, you know, food stamps? And it's preposterous.
Yeah, it really is. And now we're sort of in a new age. I think there's been some paradigm shifts, you know, over the past even just 5 years. I'll give you an example, gig economies like delivery jobs, you know, Uber Eats, Uber driving, DoorDash, all these sort of things. We're hearing that that people set up like small, you know, maybe I guess citizens are setting up small businesses. And then they buy small fleets of cars, and they can take 5, 10, 15, 50 people that are here illegally and let them drive these vehicles. And, you know, there's just so many holes in this process, because most of the police, if they pull someone over undocumented, they just let them go these days. And they're not going to be pulling over gig economy cars anyways, unless there's something really wrong going on. So, I mean, that has a big effect on American workers that were doing a lot of those gig economy jobs.
Well, I mean, it's not only that. You also have to worry about, what if my child is driving and gets struck by one of them? I mean, I've seen many videos of whether it was an illegal drunk driver that crashed into a car. They look and they try to keep going and they crash into another car. It was a very popular video I've seen recently. It was 2 days ago. It had over 1 million views. But we're seeing this more and more and more, where these illegal immigrants who have no driver's license, they never took a test to be prolific at our driving. They can't speak the language. So our signs have what? English on the signs, you know, and they don't care about our customs. They don't care about our culture. They don't, you know, have the ability to be able to be drawn into the society that we're in, and they're going to cause damage and there's no repercussions, right? What if they kill an American? I mean, if we've seen that were murdered since they opened the borders. I mean, it's so sad. Every day you hear another story about a woman raped, a woman murdered, you know, somebody robbed at gunpoint, killed, carjackings. It's you would think the Democratic media would hush that down, but it's so frequent that they can't hush it down because it's everywhere. So it's not a great strategy.
Well, there are consequences. Unfortunately, the consequences are only borne by American citizens. A friend of mine's teenage daughter a few years ago was hit by an unlicensed, unregistered illegal alien. And the cops let that woman drive away while my friend's daughter had to wait and, you know, was put through the ringer by the insurance company. They had to get a police report. And then my friend's insurance went up because she was hit by an illegal, you know, her daughter was hit by an illegal driver. It's just, it's ridiculous that we're bearing the expenses for these people. But I challenge the premise, Joe. I was trained as a biologist, and the way you read a scientific paper, one of the first things you look at is the methodology. How is the experiment conducted? Is the methodology sound? Is the statistical analysis sound? So I learned from a very young age to challenge the premise of things. And I challenge the question that these illegal aliens are taking jobs that wouldn't be done by American citizens. Case in point, a meatpacking plant out in Nebraska a few years ago, ICE went through and raided the plant and arrested all the illegals there. There was literally a line around the block the next day of Americans applying for those jobs. So I don't agree that they're taking jobs that Americans won't do. I think in a lot of cases, they're taking jobs from Americans that are looking for gainful employment.
Yeah, I was saying that is the narrative that they're spinning.
No, I understand that. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm disagreeing with the narrative.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, think of our children. You know, I have a 14, 11, 8-year-old. Where are they going to find employment? I mean, I'm seeing McDonald's, right, in my town in Connecticut. They're gainfully employed by 30-something-year-olds, 50-year-olds. It's not like it's their 16 and 18-year-old kids. Those jobs are gone. And so now they put another pressure on the middle class and the conservatives that have families that say, usually I need to teach my child to gain employment. I need to teach them how to become an adult, which is earning revenue, trading time for currency, how to spend their money. And that is getting taken away from us parents by people overseas that don't have the same education. They don't have the same responsibilities. I mean, if you look at it, they live 10 deep in a 2-bedroom, 3-bedroom, you know, so they're saving up all this money and they're sending it all back to the country, to their family, and us middle-class Americans who need that extra income coming into our family is getting robbed, and it's wrong, and something needs to be done about it because it's just squeezing the middle class even more.
It is, and we've got just a couple minutes left. We're constantly seeing sensationalistic headlines like the third and final U.S. currency earthquake has started and China has grabbed gold by the throat as capital flight accelerates. Is this inflation's next move and economic collapse? Is this something that we need to be worried about?
Yeah, I mean, it's very simple for me, right? Everyone's thinking about checkers, but I think the Democrats are playing chess. I think they're going to install Donald Trump, meaning rig the election to let him win. And then they're going to keep the market up on stilts for another, 8 months? And then they're going to crash the economy. They're going to crash it so hard. Because what have Republicans been saying since 2016, 17, 18, right before COVID? Money got the highest returns. Gas was a dollar. So they're not going to be able to stop gas from becoming a dollar because Trump's going to get in there. He's going to open the Keystone pipelines. He's going to make us energy efficient. And a lot of people don't think they're going to allow Trump to win, but I think they will. Because I think their main goal is to destroy the MAGA movement. And they're not going to be able to do that by continuously stealing election after election. They're going to have to implant him and say, look, Donald Trump win. Let the Republicans, you know, get happy because they have most of the money in the country because they're conservatives. They have something to conserve. And then they're going to dump their money in the market. Big companies like BlackRock, Vanguard, S&G, PIMCO, they're going to pull, crash the market, and guess who's going to be left holding the bag with all the major mainstream media is pointing at Donald Trump saying what? It's your fault. Just like COVID. It's your fault. It's your fault. It's your fault. And they're going to push him into a corner to implement some crazy central digital something that's going to hurt us, just like the COVID vaccine did. And he was so proud to have the COVID vaccine with warp speed, because I feel like that was his only play. You know, I don't know if they really understood or had another option to say, no, the vaccine's not a good thing. And then people would be up in arms. Right. So I think
that's a diabolical strategy. So you're probably onto something there. That's absolutely something that they're likely to do. We're going to keep an eye on it. And I know you are. We can't wait to have you back here on State of the Nation to continue this conversation, Joe.
Always a pleasure, Timothy. Thank you so much.
That's Joe Lombardi of Iron Hawk Financial. Go to ironhawkfinancial.com to learn more about Joe's business and how he can help your business. You're listening to State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's Jason Burmis.
Unfortunately, constantly, I'm talking to these political analysts that don't see any way out of the current situation except vote harder. And then every time that I bring up the fact that we have not only a corrupt system via the mail-in ballots, via the ballot harvesting, but the machines, I get a lot of radio silence. I get sometimes a nod and an agreement with me, but there's never a solution that's presented other than we need to go back to paper ballots and voter ID. Duh. Can anyone tell me how we get there? Can anybody tell me how we get there?
Jason Burmis on today's News Talk, TNT.
Is like a computer, no matter how efficient it may be. Its reliability is only as great as the information fed into it.
That's a campaign promise.
Tell us the truth. Tell us the truth.
We mandate that the truth be told.
You're hearing it.
TNT.
Now, we recently discussed the case out of Nogales, Arizona, where rancher George Allen Kelly was on trial for the murder of an illegal alien found dead on his property. And as you probably heard yesterday here on State of the Nation, Judge Thomas Fink declared a mistrial just 2 days ago and set a status hearing on April 29th, in which the prosecution will either move to schedule a retrial or move to dismiss the case. Dr. Ron Martinelli is the lead forensic consultant on this case, and he's rejoining us now for an update in this very important case. Dr. Martinelli, welcome back to State of the Nation. I think we spoke on April 16th. That episode is available in the archives, probably marked as April 17th because of the time shift between here and the mothership in Australia. So if you missed that, you should go check it out. But we're going to pick up where we left off with this breaking news with Dr. Martinelli. So Dr. Martinelli, Timothy and I were immediately concerned yesterday. We were relieved and concerned. We were relieved because obviously, the ruling, but we're concerned about this part where they say the prosecution might move to schedule a retrial. So what does this all look like from your perspective?
Well, first of all, Brian and Tim, thank you for having me back on. I really appreciate an opportunity to speak with both of you and then your audience. So, you know, I was there in Arizona. And I watched the verdict, I mean, if you want to call it that. But I mean, it's a partial victory for Allen and Wanda Kelly, because it was a 7-1 vote. And so after 15 hours of deliberation on 2.5 days, the jury just kept coming back to Judge Fink and telling him that they were hopelessly deadlocked. And so, of course, the judge has to go through the legal protocols very quickly. You know, do you need anything more? Do you need more testimony? Do you need more evidence? Do you need more jury instruction? They said, no, we just can't move past this. So it turned out there was one lone juror, one lone holdout. So The judge thanked the jury, adjourned them back to the deliberation room and said, hey, I'm going to come back and thank you for your service and I'm going to talk with you. The prosecutors and the defense also requested to go back, and that request was granted. Here's the short of it. After talking with this lone holdout juror, both sides, including the judge, I think it just left everybody shaking their heads because the logic or the lack of logic by this person just wasn't going to move the needle. They had their truth instead of the truth, and they were just set upon a guilty verdict no matter what the evidence was.
Well, that's actually encouraging, because my question to you was going to be, do you know which way the 7-1 went? Was it a noble lone holdout like we saw in 12 Angry Men? Or was it seven people that knew what they were doing and one idiot? It sounds like it wasn't the former. So do you think that the prosecution will take a cue from that jury imbalance and realize that even if it does move for a second trial? And by the way, in Arizona, is that a matter of right? Does the prosecution get to do that as a matter of right, or do they have to ask the court for permission to bring a new trial?
No, that's a matter of right for them. But let me just say a couple of things to make sure I'm very clear. It was 7-1 to acquit.
Right. So do you think do you think the prosecution's going to take a lead there and say, you know what, even if we do retry this guy, he's probably going to be acquitted because we're not going to run into another juror like that lone holdout the second time around?
Right. You know, that's such a great question. And here's my response to that, you know, Brian and Tim. You just don't know what this prosecutor's going to do. You know, I mean, I've been doing this for 50 years, all right? You know, I've been in court as a detective for almost 25 years. This is my 32nd year as a forensic investigator and an expert witness. My whole team are very experienced. Many of them are experienced homicide experts. We're all shaking our heads here. We're trying to figure out what is the moving force behind this county prosecutor, Mr. Silva, and the sheriff, Hathaway, trying to push this case against this, to us, an obviously innocent man. And I mean, we just don't know where this is coming from. I will tell you that they are both running for political office. And maybe they want Mr. Kelly's scalp on their wall. But you know what? Here's the good news for Mr. and Mrs. Kelly. The other side, you know, the investigators, in my personal opinion and the opinion of other experts, confirmation bias to the roof. There was zero forensic evidence for them. Nobody ever established a motive. Remember the Detective School 101, means, motive, opportunity. Where's the big M here, right? Where's the motive? And then, other than shell casings on the ground, which Mr. Kelly admits to firing a number of warning shots high up into the air away from these people, that's the only forensic evidence you have. There's no bullet that nobody, the medical examiner, two ballistic experts that they brought in, they couldn't establish anything. And then this whole false narrative about Mr. Buttigieg being a, quote, you know, a Mexican national seeking the American dream, close quotes. Even the Border Patrol had to concede that he fit the profile of a drug or human trafficking smuggler or a scout. He has a sophisticated two-way radio, camouflage clothing, tactical boots. I mean, I don't know where these people are going with this. And I think the jury saw through it, finally.
Yeah. And I mean, the way you describe him, it really, it's like, that is exactly the kind of person that could end up being shot by one of the people that he is traveling with. We've seen cases over and over again of all types of people involved in just moving over to and fro from the border, having loss of life incidences.
Yeah, Brian, and Mr. Kelly, you know, testified before he even went out of the house, he heard a shot fired, okay, a singular shot. He and his wife both saw a number of people dressed in camouflage clothing trespassing on the property, very large backpacks. Two people had rifles. Mr. Kelly testified that when he went out, he told his wife to take cover. He was concerned about her safety, his safety. He grabbed his rifle. He stepped out onto the porch. And as he did so, one of the people that was moving in a southerly direction turned around and brandished a rifle at him, for God's sakes. I mean, if Mr. Kelly would have really shot and killed that person, that would have been self-defense. I mean, clear on its face. So, you know, we're just trying to figure out where the state is going. Let me add this, and I don't think a lot of people know this. The ultimate authority, which is the district attorney's office in filing these charges, these people wear badges. These people are law enforcement officers as well. And besides attorneys, they're Leos. And they knew for months what their experts and their law enforcement detectives were going to say. They knew this for months. And they knew there was no case there. And they continued to push and push and push. Here's another thing. Every single person from the other side of the border that was associated with this case was a convicted drug smuggler, a convicted bringing weapons into the United States, as perhaps a trafficker, did federal and state prison time. Every single person that law enforcement spoke with, the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Department and the Santa Cruz County Prosecutor's Office, they never vetted these people. We had to do the deep search for records to find out what their criminal histories were. And then the county prosecutors continually tried to block us in court from you know, suggesting to the jury that there was some cartel involvement here. It's absolutely amazing. You take the word of these, you know, people from the other side of the border who are all nefarious individuals by admission against a man and his wife in their 70s who've never been in trouble, who Border Patrol described as being friendly, cooperative, and engaging. It's you just want to beat your head against the wall.
Yeah, you really do. There's not much more American of an activity to be a property owner and to hear, you know, that happening on your property and know that your wife and your property are at risk, and to grab one's rifle and go stand watch on the patio. And that sounds like exactly what he did. Ron, please hold the line. We have a headline we're going to take. We'll come back. We'll pick up right here. This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
Really big, 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 the biggest breaking news story. Big, gigantic, big, enormous.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. President Joe Biden has signed a significant $95 billion national security package just 12 hours after the Senate approved it, providing substantial foreign aid to Ukraine, Israel, and the Indo-Pacific. U.S. officials have mandated that dairy cows must be tested for the highly pathogenic avian influenza before being moved between states, according to a federal order issued by the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa. Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Okay, Ron. So what are we looking at next? Where's your team looking as you approach? It's 5 days out. So what are you guys working on in the next 5 days? It's really an amazing story. I don't even know how your team, how do you prepare against something that is as nonsensical as this?
Well, it's so hard. It's so hard to do because we're fact finders. I mean, you know, we don't have a dog in this fight, and we've given hundreds and hundreds of pro bono hours. That means free. To the Kellys. Listen, and we told the defense team at the very beginning, and Mr. Kelly, listen, if we think you did it, buddy, you know, we're going to tell your defense team and we're going to bow out. But after reviewing the evidence, it quickly became, you know, we became aware that, hey, this is an innocent guy, and we've got to pull out all the stops to try to help him and his wife. You know, Brian, I do want to take a moment because it's so important. Mr. and Mrs. Kelly have depleted their bank accounts and their savings. They've spent almost $2 million, if you can imagine this, fighting this case. He has a legal defense fund, and I just want to put the website out. It's givesendgo.com, all one word, givesendgo.com. When you get on that, he's got an account. It's George Allen Kelly, and we would appreciate donations and obviously prayers. I mean, if you can do one or the other or both, we would certainly appreciate that. Now, I want to go back to your original question. Just like in any battle, we hope for the best. You know, we prepare for the worst, but we hope for the best. We're waiting for the shoe to drop. You know, to us and anybody with common sense, that jury sent back a pretty clear message to this county prosecutor and this sheriff. Don't go down this road again. I will tell you, if this continues and this county prosecutor, decides to refile, first of all, they can't make anything better. You can't put lipstick on a pig. You just can't do it. They can't try to fix the mistakes they made. And I promise everybody here that I will throw every single forensic and law enforcement resource at them to save Mr. Kelly and to continue to speak truth here.
Well, just their entire theory of the case is ludicrous because, as we all know, the desert has 10 million holes, right? So if Mr. Kelly had killed this illegal alien, one of those holes would have been filled. But no, he's the one. He's the one that called for law enforcement. So their theory of the case is that he killed this guy and then he called the cops to make it seem like he didn't kill this guy. I mean, that's just ludicrous.
Hey, listen, and I think we talked about this last time. He called the police in the afternoon at 2:30. That's when this started. He said that there were shots fired. He said that he fired shots. He told them about that. There is such a group of false narratives here put out by the prosecutor and some of the complicit mainstream media. He never reported the shots. He reported it from the very beginning. We have the transcripts of that. We have the 911 calls. Eight law enforcement people came out there in broad daylight. They looked all over the place. They couldn't find a body. Then he goes out there at 5:30 with his dogs to put his horse away, and there's a dead body there. The ME said, when we presented a hypothetical to her, because there was no bullet found, they couldn't determine trajectory, and he bled out. She said there was a possibility he could have been shot hundreds of yards away from here and then just bled out and collapsed where he found him. The inexperience and the confirmation bias of the sheriff and the sheriff's detectives here was absolutely astounding. It was like working with a third world police department. I mean, this is the stuff that you get in Central America or in Mexico. We don't expect this stuff in the United States. And again, you know, we're looking at this as experienced homicide detectives and forensic experts. We just can't figure it out. But, you know, one thing I want to add is that I don't know if you saw the YouTube video from Sheriff Hathaway, but there is just Google Sheriff Hathaway YouTube video and it's going to come right up. You won't believe what he says. He calls the Customs and Border Patrol and his surrounding sheriffs. He calls them Gestapo. He says that Border Patrol has committed, many atrocities at the border for which they've never been prosecuted for. He minimizes migrant deaths, migrant rapes. He says, hey, nothing to see here, folks, over in Nogales County when the Border Patrol is working, overtime to stop it. And by the way, you want to talk about the hypocrisy, the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's that says that there's nothing going on the border. They're they have grant money paid by the federal government to assist Border Patrol in interdiction of drug and human traffickers. You can't make this stuff up. And this is a guy running for office again, and the county prosecutor, Mr. Silva. You know, hey, listen, I hope the people in Santa Cruz County understand that you should be afraid. These are the people that you put in power to protect you, and look what they're doing. If they can do something like this to Mr. Kelly, just what do you think they can do to you? Right? Yeah. Elections have consequences. I hope the county prosecutor sees the light of day, makes a decision to let this go away and drop these charges against Mr. Kelly. And then I hope the voters Remember what happened here, and come election time, they make the right choices and bring people in that can absolutely protect them, not this idiocy.
Yeah, yeah, that's very well said. I think that's a great place to leave it. Definitely go watch that YouTube video. I mean, you've never seen a more clear view of a someone completely obsessed with identity politics, a partisan hack, if you will. Definitely not, at least definitely not someone that understands the actual situation politically and border wise. And go to givesendgo.com/George Allen Kelly. That's GEORGEALANKELLY. Did I get that right, Ron?
Yes, you did. And listen, thank you so much for the support that your station has provided us so that we can speak the truth. That's the logo of Martinelli and Associates. We speak for the dead and we defend the innocent. Thank you so much. God bless all of you.
Thank you. God bless you, too, sir. Dr. Ron Martinelli, right here on State of the Nation. We hope you'll come back for an update sometime after the 29th, and maybe this can all be over at that point, and we can start looking at some of the other amazing work that you're doing over there, because we know you're really busy and you've got more big cases that we can talk about. So we'd be happy to amplify some of that as well.
There's more innocent people out there, and we try to do our best to save them.
All right. Excellent. Well, we're going to do our best to help you do that. This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
When a crisis hits close to home and across the globe, nonprofits are on the front lines, ready to serve.
Keep coming.
The demand for charitable services has skyrocketed, and nonprofits are rising to meet the needs. Healing. Nurturing. Rescuing, honoring, protecting, caring, inspiring. The work of philanthropic organizations of all sizes, across all missions, has never been more important. And it's donors and volunteers like you who make all this possible. Thank you. Together, we change the world. The Nonprofit Alliance.
The Kids Cancer Project funds vital research into childhood cancers. And you fund the Kids Cancer Project. Funding research means giving children back their lives. And who knows what kids with cancer could grow up to do? The Kids Cancer Project. Survival starts with science. Donate now.
The Kids Cancer Project.
Interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McLean on today's News Talk, TNT.
In the great words of the Gipper, former California Governor Ronald Reagan, well, there they go again. Monday afternoon, Democrat members of the California State Senate's Energy, Utilities, and Communications Committee rejected Senate Bill 1326, the Cost of Living Reduction Act, that was proposed by Minority Leader Brian Jones. The measure had an urgency clause, and had it passed and became law, it would have immediately repealed an unfair law that mandates the California Public Utilities Commission impose an uncapped fixed charge on electrical bills. Thousands of Californians signed the petition in support of the measure, but Senate Democrats ignored their concerns. Joining us now to discuss is the bill's sponsor, California State Senate Minority Leader Brian Jones. Senator Jones, welcome back to State of the Nation.
Thanks. Hi, Timothy. Hi, Brian.
Legislation is understandably complex, so could you break down for us why this bill would have made the lives of average Californians better, and why you think it was rejected by the Democrats?
Sure. Let me first unpack your opening comment, because actually you mentioned some things I hadn't really considered all in one statement, in that when you said the legislature is forcing the PUC to force the utility companies to add this charge, just think about that for a minute. And really, it started with the governor's office coming to the legislature last summer, getting a bill, AB 205, into the legislative process late in the year, through a budget trailer bill, which is never supposed to include policy. The budget trailer bills are only supposed to be dealing with the budget and implementing the budget of the state. And so that bill was jammed through the legislature, forcing the PUC, the Public Utilities Commission, to come up with a program, forcing the utilities to put an additional fixed rate charge on our utility bills, forcing Californians to pay more money for their electricity. And so what my bill would have done is unwound that entire process and put us back to the original legislation that was only, we're at a $10 fixed rate charge on our utility bills. And my bill would have eliminated the legislature's ability to force the PUC into forcing the utilities to doing this absurd fixed rate charge.
It's like a twisted game of dominoes, you know. It sounds like something out of a mob movie or something, you know, just one entity forcing another, all of whom are supposed to be representing and supporting a citizenry, you know, of the great state of California.
Right.
And the dominoes just fall all the way down. And there you are with the stop to it, you know, you're the firewall and no dice.
Yeah, Timothy's got me all fired up on a new direction with this, with the messaging on this bill, that to the point where I might do an op-ed now on how disconnected the California government is from the voters. So just seeing that process that we went through, five layers of different policymakers, and it comes down to the voters and the utility rate payers in California being jammed with this fixed rate charge. It's just absurd. And the original proposal from the utilities and several nonprofits and environmental groups was to make this fixed rate charge based on income. That was the original thing I was trying to fight here. And that was the main point of the bill, was to remove that ability of the PUC to ever come up with another absurd idea like that. And unfortunately, all 14 Democrats on this committee, they didn't even vote no, they just didn't vote. So all four of my Republican colleagues supported the bill. None of the Democrats even opined on the bill from the dais and didn't even vote at all one way or the other on the bill.
And I know with particularity that the fixed rate charge is uncapped. So
as it
always does, the question comes down to cui bono. Who benefits from this? Is the state right. going to be getting more money? Is it the investors that are members of the people running this state? Who's going to benefit from all of this?
Well, I can almost promise you, and if this turns out to be not true, I will do a mea culpa, but I can almost promise you in the state of California and these investor-owned utilities, they aren't going to be the ones that get the advantage of this rate. It's going to be the state, and it's going to be one more bucket of money that goes into our general fund to be wasted by the legislature and the governor's Department of Finance.
Oh, my goodness. You know, it's so frustrating. I was telling Timothy during one of the breaks, I track what some of our representatives do in the stock market via this account called Insider Tracker. And I flagged up Representative Michael McCall, who bought $700,000 worth of, this is a little off topic, but I think it'll spin back around and circle back, bought $700,000 worth of Meta stocks 2 weeks before voting yes on the bill to ban TikTok. So on the first of the month, $350,000 purchase, the fifth of the month, $350,000 purchase, 13th of the month, votes to ban TikTok, which is clearly, you know, something that he's going to benefit from. Do you think there's stuff like that going on as well with some of these people that abstain from voting?
Well, no, I would be, I think it'd be hard pressed to come up with that philosophy in this case. You know, and really in California, our disclosure requirements are much more stringent and different than the federal government. And we don't have the insider trading information that, you know, allegedly the Congress people have. So, no, I wouldn't be concerned about in this case. This is just an ideological difference between the Republicans and the Democrats in Sacramento. Republicans believe that we need to reduce the cost of living in California. Democrats are beholden to their environmental and trial attorney special interests that continue to benefit from these outrageous utility rates that we're paying in California. And then here's the other, kind of point to this that you might want to pick up on is in California, about half the population gets their electricity from investor-owned utilities, and about half the population gets their electricity from municipal utility districts that are under completely different rules and regulations and laws that the municipal utilities get to do things on their own with their own approval without the oversight of the PUC. And now the PUC, and the other layer in this whole thing regarding the PUC, Public Utilities Commission, all of those commissioners that sit on this commission and vote on these issues are all appointed by the governor. Holy. And so to say that they wouldn't be beholden to the governor is a complete false statement. They are beholden to the governor. And whatever the governor wants the PUC to do, the PUC does. And whatever the PUC wants done, the utilities have to comply.
Do you think ratepayers might have an equal protection clause argument? Because as we know, the Constitution, by virtue of the 14th Amendment, applies to state government. And if the state is going to put its thumb on the scales like that and have two sets of rules, one for publicly owned utilities and one for privately owned utilities, seems to me there's an equal protection argument to be made.
That might be something that is something I will look into, and I will bring that up to my utility consultant this afternoon.
Great. And one other thing I note is that there's a mechanism for conservatorship, right? If you've got a family member that's exhibiting bizarre behavior, irrational, delusional even, you can go to court and apply for a conservatorship. Could Californians go to court and apply for a conservatorship of Governor Gavin Newsom, because he's treating the tax dollars like he treats the water? Oh, we got reservoirs full of water. Let's flush it in the ocean to save a little fishy.
I would love to see somebody try that. Unfortunately, in California, our conservatorship laws are so loose right now that we have 180,000 homeless people living on the street already. Adding one more to that population isn't going to help solve the problem.
No, but it's going to be like the 100th light bulb, right? Once you got 99 lit, what's one more?
Right, exactly.
So, Senator Jones, I'm curious, we're talking about sort of the overall mission statement of the Democrat Party right now. We know that they don't like natural gas, right? We want to ban everything down to the little Coleman tubes that we, take camping with us to boil water.
Already done that here, as a matter of fact. I know it was tried a couple of times, and it came up last year at the end of session. And I think the people that are producing those have to find a way to bring them back to be recycled.
Oh my gosh. Well, this may require some speculation, and I don't mean to ask you to speculate, but I'm just curious when I look forward and kind of game theory this out, like what the goals are. Is there maybe something there to making the prices so expensive and then putting some sort of barrier between electric and gas, such that people will be financially motivated to, switch to more electric things and away from gas?
Well, there's definitely a motivation from my Democrat colleagues and their special interest groups that are pushing them in this direction. And one of the things I said earlier is environmental groups. And what your viewers need to understand in California, these aren't legitimate environmental groups that actually care about the environment. These are highly paid, highly trained environmental attorneys that make their money off of either suing local governments or corporations or the state when people don't comply with the ridiculous legislation and laws that they're forcing through Sacramento. So to your question specifically, yes, there probably are people in the special interest groups that are motivated by that and pushing that. It would be a stretch for me to say that my Democrat colleagues that are actually elected here have that motivation, but I'm sure it's part of the conversation.
Makes sense. I mean, we've seen attacks on wood stoves. I mean, it's absolutely crazy to see, we can't have a range top, can't have a wood stove. Did the generator thing go through? I remember there was talk about banning generators too.
Brian, we've banned yard tools from being gas powered. I think by 2025, actually, I'll have my communications director verify that for you. But you can't have a gas powered weed whacker or a gas powered blower. Those all have to be rechargeable. So there is definitely a push in California to make everything all electric. And one of the things that your viewers in California, outside of California, need to realize that this movement to get away from fossil fuels and any kind of emissions and any kind of activity in California has taken on a religious fervor to the point now that they've outlawed and banned gas-powered weed trimmers and blowers. That's how ridiculous it is. And so what they don't take into consideration, we've had several bills over the last week dealing with this, is the heavy metals, the rare earth elements that it takes to make these batteries and make all of this equipment run. We had a bill yesterday that would require notification and just a disclosure of the cobalt that's coming from the Republic of Congo in Africa, how it's mined and what children are involved with the mining and slave labor that's involved in the mining of this cobalt, so that Americans can have rechargeable cars. Are you kidding me? These are things that we need to know about. And my Democrat colleagues in the legislature killed that bill too. And it was a bipartisan bill, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, they're all about fair trade coffee, and yet they don't care where their cobalt comes from. And the
that's
pictures.
That's exactly right.
The pictures from the Congo are absolutely heartbreaking. Young children, 6, 7, 8 years old, up to their knees, up to their thighs in mud.
It's despicable.
Know, scrambling through for rock. It's unbelievable, the conditions. It's the ultimate NIMBY attitude, right? I'm so right. clean and virtuous for using clean electricity. And yet right. these poor people are literally living up to their thighs in mud.
So all of these leftist liberals in California think they're saving San Francisco, but they're destroying another part of the world worse than if they would just move on the way we were in California.
And I just shut yeah. up and eat your bugs and be happy, right?
Yeah, eat the bugs. Use drive the Tesla if you can afford it. Drive the exploding bike. I mean, where does it stop? I mean, it's clearly driving a lot of people out of California too. I mean, the cost of energy there was ridiculous before all this stuff happened, and now it just looks like it's a slippery slope to where this ends, and especially with no cap on it.
There, your viewers in other states may find this very hard to believe, but there are times, months in the summertime, that my electric bill is $600 a month. And look, I'm not rich. I'm a public servant serving in the legislature. Some of my colleagues in the legislature are rich. So maybe they've insulated themselves from this situation, but I live in a blue collar neighborhood. I hear from my neighbors. I talk to my neighbors. I'm with my neighbors when these electric rates are going through the roof and they're having to pay $400, $500, $600, sometimes $1,000 a month just for electricity. It's ridiculous and it's got to stop.
It yeah. does have to stop. We have a couple minutes left. What else should people be keeping an eye on out there in California? What's cooking?
Well, fortunately, my sexually violent predator bill did pass last week, and so we're going to be continuing to work on that. Many of your viewers may have heard this before, that California has a system where we have sexually violent predators that once they finish their commitment to the state prisons and to the state hospitals, they can be released. And the current program releases them into neighborhoods to unsuspecting areas where families live, children, elderly, and they're just and there's a private contractor that oversees this program, not even the state. So we're trying to overhaul that. We have an audit looking at the program. Both the audit and the bill have passed, and so we're going to continue working on that. One of my bills, unfortunately, that died was my SAFE Act that deals with homeless encampments, and so. We wanted to clear homeless encampments from transit centers, schools, and open spaces and on sidewalks. And my Democratic colleagues killed that bill in committee as well. But we're going to keep working on that issue because that was also a bipartisan bill. So all that to say, some of my Democrat colleagues are coming around on these issues.
Well, that's good to hear. You're out in California. I know California gets a bad rap. I think it's one of the most beautiful states in America, and I know an awful lot of great conservative Republicans there. You're one of them. Senator Brian Jones, you're fighting the good fight. You can follow Senator Jones on X at Senator Brian Jones, at Sen Brian Jones, SenBrianJones. Senator Jones, can't wait to have you back on State of the Nation to talk more about these issues.
Thanks.
That's it for tonight's State of the Nation. Stay tuned on today's News Talk for the Jason Burmish Show. For Brian Hesher-McLean, I'm Timothy Shea. Until next time, God bless you. God bless these United States. Keep fighting the good fight.